Welcome to Energy Stew. This is Peter Roth, your host, and I'd like to ask you, are you living a tantric life? Has anybody asked you that before? Maybe you are anyway. Maybe you can do a better job of it. And to help you and us do a better job of it, there's actually a book called Tantra for the West, A Direct Path to Living the Life of Your Dreams. Oh, that sounds very promising. And to help us understand Tantra a lot more in our lives is the author of the book, Mark Allen. Mark, welcome to Energy Stew.
Peter, thanks for having me on.
Sure. You know, we've talked before, and I love the books that you publish because you're also the publisher, the owner of New World Library.
Yes, I started it with a few self-published books and then published Creative Visualization by Shakti Gawain.
Okay.
And it took off and sold 3 million copies and launched the company.
Congratulations. And you have so many wonderful books since, and many of your authors have been on my show, and your publicists are doing a great job of getting them to me.
Great. It's good to hear.
And I'm glad that you're still writing.
Oh, yes.
And this is a delicious book. It's really an opportunity to understand how to live more wholesomely. Let's just talk briefly about the word Tantra.
Yes. It kind of cracks me up that if anyone in the West has heard the word Tantra, they almost invariably think of sex with some kind of mysticism or yogic practice thrown in. And yet you go study Tantra. I spent 4 years in my 20s full-time studying Buddhism, about 6 months for studying Zen, and then I wandered into a Tibetan center in Berkeley, California, and studied Tibetan Buddhism for 3.5 years full-time. So I spent more time studying Buddhism than I spent at the university. He kept calling it Tantra. It was Tantric Buddhism. The teachings of Buddha are written down as the sutras. In Tibet, the teachings are the Tantras. What is this Tantra? Well, I spent years trying to figure it out, 3.5 years there, and then as I left, I really wanted to make those years worthwhile and see how they applied to my life. And I started making all these notes. I used my life as my research, which is a Buddhist practice. In fact, Buddhism isn't really a religion. It's more of a therapy and a philosophy, a psychology, if you will. It's very scientific. Einstein even said that. He said it's the only so-called religion that holds up to scientific practice.
And then there are also Buddhist rituals and, you know, procedures that a lot of Buddhists follow in their lives, doing, you know, all kinds of exercises and meditations and things like that. But that's not what you're talking about.
No. What I'm really talking about was the whole concept of what this path of Tantra is. And one time and how it can apply to our lives today. Is it useful for our lives today? I knew it was because of the Tibetans I met seemed to have something. They had something very valuable. They had an inner peace, a serenity, in spite of their really bad circumstances, being driven from their country and, you know, horribly exploited. But they're the most wonderful, happiest people you'll meet. So what is this? Well, it's these teachings, the teachings of Tantra. What is that about? Well, one time the teacher said, here's how he can explain the differences in the paths. We're all on a path up the mountain. And the path has patches of poison growing across it, he said. And in Tibetan, the word for poison is the same as what we call so-called negative emotions, anger, fear, envy, greed. They're called poisons. And the Tibetans believe they do poison your body. We need to cleanse our bodies of those poisons. Well, on our path, we encounter some poison. He said, first the monk or the nun comes along, they see the poison and immediately go the other way. And that's a perfectly valid, wonderful path for them. But that's not for most of us. Then the bodhisattva, the awakening being, comes up the path, sees the poison, and plows right through the poison and goes on up their path up to awakening for themselves and all of humanity. And that's a wonderful path, too. But then, he said, the tantric yogi comes up, the person practicing tantra, and he or she sees the poison and immediately goes off the path into the center of the poison. I reflected on that for a long time. What are they talking about?
Well,
they're saying every moment of our lives, rejecting nothing, is part of our path.
But let's
every
just
moment.
Say, you know, let's just say that you have to have the right attitude.
Because
right. You're not going to jump into a patch of poison and go, oh, how wonderful, I'm swimming in poison here. Unless you have a good attitude about it.
Yes, the attitude, right. And you've got to have some teachings. You've got to have some instruction. And he gave us instruction.
Right.
One afternoon, for instance, all of us, he took us down in the basement. There were maybe 35 of us, the full-time people living there. We sat around in a great big circle in the center of the basement, no windows in the room. And he said, okay, imagine your mother is laying in the center of that circle, and she has just died. How do you feel? And we spent 2 or 3 hours getting into our feelings of grief. Most of us were 20-something. Most of us had parents who were still relatively young and vital. We hadn't thought of this. But we spent a whole afternoon getting into grief, the emotion of grief.
Right.
There were all kinds of tears and everything. And I kept thinking, this is an amazing path. I see what he's doing. It's the path that involves every moment, including every emotion that arrives.
Right, grief
and then,
is okay.
Yeah, and then afterward he gave us instruction how to deal with that emotion. He said, everything in the universe, including every feeling, has an outer, an inner, and a secret side to it. We see the outer easily. When we go into the inner and go more and more and more deeply, we finally break through into the great secret. And what's that great secret? It's the secret that awakens us. It's the secret that allows us to live the life of our dreams, even. So grief, what's that about? Well, the outer grief, there's crying, there's weeping, you feel tremendous loss, you feel abandoned, all these feelings you see people go through. Everyone goes through grief so differently, but at its core, it's the same, this feeling, outer. Inner, what's going on? Well, you can look at how the emotion is moving in your body, how it's affecting that body. You go deep enough into the inner of anything, and you start getting into the quantum level of being. What is that emotion? It's movement. It's energy. In our body, what is our body? What is our inner body? Well, it's composed of all these organs that are composed of all these cells. These cells are composed of all these molecules. Here's where it gets very scientific. You go deeply enough into the inner world of anything, and you break through into the great secrets of our existence. Within that grief, it's just movement. It's movement of emotion that will pass. And that emotion moves because of these amazing bodies we have. And within these amazing bodies, when you get down to it, we're all energy. It is a energy stew. It is a quantum soup. We are all one in this quantum field. When you get more deeply into the inner plane of anything.
So this actually understands all of the conflicts in our lives, that it's all going on. It's part of the journey that we're on, is to embrace, you know, this poison patch of all these poison patches of conflict in our lives, but with an attitude that's larger than the conflict. that hold it in an eternal, in a universal way that, of course, life is conflict, has conflict. We're suffering in the conflict. Well, that's life. It's full of opportunities to feel the poison and not have opinions and judgments about it that make it even worse.
Right. We turn it everything into our spiritual path. He even said, okay, this path of Tantra, it's the path of 24/7 spiritual path. He says, once you get on it, you can't just get off. Once you embrace the fact that every moment is your spiritual teaching, rejecting nothing, then you're on a very direct path. He kept calling it the direct path. The direct path. It's the best path because it works with everything, every moment. It isn't just something you do Sunday morning or just something you do when you meditate every day. No, it's the path you're on 24/7. It embraces everything. So it includes sex, but it also includes relationships. It also includes our work. It also includes our politics. It includes everything.
And that's all in the book. You have chapters on all of that.
Yeah.
And that was very helpful because it's good for us to see not only how to address all of these issues through that larger point of view, but in your book, you create all kinds of opportunities to work on it.
Right.
You have wonderful affirmations and meditations.
Yeah, it's filled with very, very concrete tools. The Tibetan tradition gives you all these concrete, solid tools, including a lot of mantra, a lot of chanting. And I took the mantras and chanted. I really gave it a shot to do the traditional thing. For 3.5 years, I was a traditional Tibetan Buddhist student anyway. And then I found the traditional form didn't work, at least for me, being an American. I found in trying to embrace a tradition so different, I was denying my own roots, in a way, denying everything about America, rejecting a whole lot. And here he kept saying it's the path that accepts everything, rejecting nothing. But I was rejecting so much of America, so I wandered away. But then I spent 4 years reflecting on it and writing this book and discovered, oh, okay, a great way to adapt mantra for Americans. Rather than Om Mani Padme Hum, which is a wonderful mantra that I used to chant on long walks, it's something like, hail to the jewel of bliss in the lotus of consciousness. There's a jewel of bliss. You focus on that. That's what the chant is. We chanted that. Well, instead, I found affirmations, like my family life and times alone are filled with grace, ease, and lightness. And after I introduced the whole concept of Tantra, the practice of the spiritual path of every moment, then the whole next chapter is affirmations, because that's what I found really was the single most powerful tool, I could say, in our spiritual tool belt.
Yes, and they're beautiful affirmations. I made notes of them that I'm going to be using.
Wonderful.
And I agree about how when we're living in a Western life, we can't just try to escape into a monastery and avoid it because we're in a sense not fulfilling that. And unless that's a true path for us, is just, you know, to become a Buddhist monk again and just live that out.
But right, and
then you would know that in your heart or not.
Right, exactly. For some people, that's a perfect path. But it's a minority, I think. Most of us want relationship. We want family. We want marriage or some kind of intimate relationship, most of us. And so our spiritual path has to encompass that. But by trying to be so traditional, I found I was cutting off my own, not only my own roots, but my own intuition. So I had to come back and really rediscover my roots and embrace it all. And then you find the teachings there, too. All these teachings are in Christianity. Christ was an incredible teacher of the same stuff Buddha was an incredible teacher of. Christ taught all about karma, for instance, which is essential to Buddhism. He said, as you sow, so shall you reap. That's a very simple, clear, wonderful way to express the inexorable law of karma.
Right, and Buddhism is all about correct action. And so,
yes.
You know, I think a lot of our listeners, I think maybe all of our listeners are really only listening to this because this is true for them. This is, you know, these are people who can understand what we're talking about and integrate this and probably have been working on it in their lives a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And this adds to the opportunity to,
yeah.
to function in this world where we can, you know, walk into, you know, these toxic conditions in life and embrace it in a way that we're not affected. We can look at it, we can feel it, we can go through those outer, inner, and then we have the opportunity of the secret. And the
yes.
secret is to see the larger context.
Right, right. The secret, no one is trying to keep anything secret whatsoever. The Lama called it self-secret. It remains a secret until we discover it. And we discover it by going into the inner part of everything, even our own bodies. We can do that. We have an outer body with a certain height and weight, and whatever. Our inner body is this amazing collection of organs and muscles and bone, and we go within that. Oh, it's composed of cells. Oh, these cells are composed of molecules and atoms. This is our body. This is where Buddhism has gotten very scientific. Our body is energy. It's empty space. It's the same as Buddhists have been chanting for 2,500 years, form is emptiness. Emptiness is form. Well, that's what scientists have started saying in the past century or so.
So you can have it both ways.
Yeah, it is very scientific. It really is just understanding what is. I know a couple hundred years ago, it must have really been difficult for people when they hear these mystics say, we're all one, or even form is emptiness. And they'd say, what do you mean? We're not all one. We're obviously very separate. And this form sure feels solid to me. What do you mean it's empty? It's solid as can be. Well, science has come along and said, no, what feels solid is completely empty.
Well, what
and
it's full
there
of
is one, you know, one quantum field.
What I think what it's full of is our opinions and our judgments and
yes,
our fears.
Yes.
And then
right.
when we see that, we can compartmentalize it.
Yeah, and so it boils down to, really, the bottom line is the only problem is our own mind. And actually, that's something we can deal with and we can affect. We can affect our own thoughts. We can't change much in the world out there. We certainly can't change other people's minds, but we can change our own.
Through affirmations and mantras and
yes.
even just this deeper understanding of reality. And,
yes.
be able to hold the context. Years
yes.
ago, I learned about detachment because that was always a confusion to me, that detachment is a good thing, so therefore we should detach from, everything that's meaningful. That didn't sound right.
Right.
So then I learned that true detachment is full engagement, but without
yes.
opinion.
Yes, yes, yes.
And once
full
I heard that...
Full engagement, and then letting the results be what they will be.
Exactly. Not judge what we're engaged in, just live it fully, deal with it, work with it, immerse yourself in it, and it becomes
right.
it becomes the larger, the secret then, the larger knowing
yeah. Yeah.
that it's all okay anyway in
yeah.
the big picture of things. And you talk about that in the book where you talk about the hundreds of billions of stars in galaxies, and you know, the universe is so large, and we're so minuscule in it. We're microscopic in this larger universe, and we make such a big deal about everything.
Yes, we do. One time I thought, who would have thought that our thinking is the problem? Our thoughts don't want to go there. Our thoughts don't want to admit that they're the problem, you know.
Right.
But they are. So we can deal with those thoughts. We can let them go in meditation. We can affirm. We can affirm. You know, my daily life is filled with grace, ease, and lightness. We can find whatever words really work for us and literally replace the old thoughts with new thoughts.
Right. And these affirmations, I was just remembering a phrase of fake it till you make it.
So, right. Can be, yes.
But
and
then
there's millions of affirmations, and it's just picking whichever one in the moment works. My office, I'm sitting here looking at, I tend to take phrases and make big copies of them and put them up on a wall. I have all these things right in front of me that I keep affirming.
I love that. That's so smart, is to remind yourself of how you want to think and how you want to be.
Yeah.
And after a while, it blends in. It grows into you.
Right. I heard a wonderful one recently. I connected with a woman I hadn't seen in 40 years. She was a teenager, and I was in my early 20s when we did a back to the land experiment, and then we each went off our own way, and I reconnected with her just recently on Facebook, and she said, well, Mark, my life's kind of like yours. I wandered around through my 20s kind of searching, and then when she turned 30, she read Creative Visualization by Shakti Gawain, and she said she got this affirmation, and I edited that book. I don't remember this affirmation from that book, but she said she got it from
you
that.
You didn't need
but
it. She did.
she started affirming, I do wonderful work in a wonderful way with wonderful people for wonderful pay. Over and over, she didn't have a job. She didn't know what she wanted to do, but she kept saying, I do wonderful work in a wonderful way with wonderful people for wonderful pay. She said she started getting all these ideas. As soon as she discovered that affirmation and started saying it, all these creative ideas came up. Oh, and she finally ended up starting her own boutique of imported stuff, and then that grew to, and she even started having imported beer there, and it became this whole community center. And she said for 30 years, she's done wonderful work in a wonderful way with wonderful people for wonderful pay.
And she keeps
that's the
that
power
going.
Of affirmation.
Sure, she learned to become that.
Yes.
And that's why people should rush out and buy the book, because
yes,
there's so many affirmations in it that you can become.
Right. Or they can buy my last book, The Magical Path. I realize it's all the same from just using different words. You can call it magic. You can call it tantra. You can call it visionary business. You can call it creative visualization. You can call it anything you want. But basically, I'm convinced, and not because I've come to believe anything, it's because I've tried these things and they've worked. I'm convinced we all have this amazingly powerful subconscious mind that says yes to every thought that we feed it. And when we say, in an easy and relaxed manner, in a healthy and positive way, I'm now creating the life of my dreams, your subconscious mind says yes and starts showing you exactly the next steps to take. The problem is, if then you say, oh, but it's so hard, so few people are successful, your subconscious mind says, yes, it's so hard for people like you with that thought, yes, it's hard.
Right.
Well, and I'm convinced that's what it is.
Yeah.
So we
yeah.
can just keep programming our subconscious mind with the most expansive, powerful things. It'll say yes. It knows no limits.
Right.
It'll say yes. You can create the life of your dreams. What do you want in your life? What you want? Serenity. You want inner peace. You want abundance. You want success. Yes. You can create all of that.
Well, in your book, you talk about the tarot card of the magician. And that we can be the magician. And then I was realizing that we're all the magicians already anyway. It's just that we're not always using the best magic.
Right. That's true. We've created our bodies, or some great force has, from cells meeting. We've developed these phenomenal physical bodies, these amazing emotional bodies, these mental bodies, and we have this amazing spiritual body. Who and what we are is truly phenomenal when you get into the inner and secret levels of who and what we are.
Well, I think starting to work with the magic that you're showing in the book, with the affirmations, the mantras, and the way we choose in life, and the way we allow ourselves to be in fear and survival, or are we going to understand that fear is just part of the process and we have to work with it and create affirmations that diminish its power.
Right. Exactly.
So it's an opportunity. I've really enjoyed being part of this journey that you're presenting in the book, and reading it and being able to interview you, because there's so many things that you have chapters about that we're faced with that we don't always remind ourselves that we can be in charge of our attitudes about it.
Right. It's just shifting. It's an easy shift to make in our minds. We're just saying, okay, every moment is our spiritual path. We are all on a path. We're evolving beings, and we want to make our lives better. At least I do. I met these teachers, and I thought, I want what they have. They had some kind of serenity and joy of life. They didn't sweat the small stuff.
Yeah, so I've spent time with Tibetan Rinpoches, and very evolved ones, let's say, and it was amazing how joyful they were, and
yes,
to be around them was just so fulfilling.
Yeah, I think that's the end result. A serenity, a real serenity, a real inner peace. That's the most beautiful result of all.
Yes, and when you can see it in others, it's contagious.
Yeah.
So we do need to be around people who reflect this, and so reading the book Tantra for the West is an opportunity for that to be conditioned by your writing and by your ideas, and so it's Tantra for the West. And you are Mark Allen, M-A-R-C Allen. How do people find you or the book
New World
Library? They
can go to the Mark Allen website, M-A-R-C-A-L-L-E-N. I've got some good videos on there, and just some good free videos that are really full of a lot of good teachings I've picked up along the way. And I've got an audio course, Success with Ease, that's really good, and I do various things. So markallen.com.
Okay, that's terrific. Now, it's so much fun to talk with you, and feeling reinforced. So it's an opportunity to really get into this wonderful place. So thank you so much, Mark, for being a guest.
Thank you, Peter. I always enjoy it. I enjoy your energy stew.
Thank you so much. And this is Peter Ross, your host of Energy Stew at PRN.FM. I can be reached at peter@heartriver.org, or 212-222-7748. I'd love to hear from you, and thank you so much for listening.